Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Sloan. California Trout is a nonprofit conservation organization that's been around for over 50 years now, with their efforts to restore streams for the general benefit of their ecosystems and, of course, for fish. But they also care about the communities of people that depend on fresh, cold, clean water, hence their motto, Fish, Water, People. Their first effort was on Hat Creek in Shasta County 50 years ago, a stretch of water that's widely regarded now as one of the finest wild trout fisheries in the country. Now California Trout has taken on more projects throughout the state from Malibu to Northern California, including one of the largest in the world, the dam removal and watershed restoration on the Klamath River, and we'll hear more about that shortly. Another recently announced signature project is taking place right in this show's proverbial backyard, Big Chico Creek, and we'll hear more about that later on in the show. Caltrout is partnering with tribal communities and their traditional ecological knowledge, along with other community stakeholders, to make life better for fish and people. To give us an overview of stream and river restoration, our first guest is Andrew Ripple. He's a professor and the Peter B. Moyle and California Trout Chair in Coldwater Fish Ecology at UC Davis in the Department of Wildlife, Fish, and Conservation Biology. And he's also the director of the Center for Watershed Sciences there at UC Davis. So I wanted him to start off by giving us an overview of what it is that they do.
Oh, the Center for Watershed Sciences is an interdisciplinary center on campus. And we have people from fundamentally different disciplines that could be engineers, geologists, ecologists working together on complicated water problems and trying to solve them in California.
Well, and Andrew, this program is about watershed restoration projects, and those especially that California Trout is involved with. Could you give us a little background on why this is so necessary right now?
Yeah, well, in California, the state of native fishes and salmon is really quite bad. I've been living in California for almost 7 years now, and 83% of native fishes in California are in some form of decline and at risk of extinction. And I was just stunned when I learned those numbers. 83%, that can't be real. But it is real. Yeah. And salmon exemplify those trends. In the Central Valley, we have four endemic runs of Chinook salmon or king salmon. Two of those four runs are listed under the Endangered Species Act. One of them, winter run Chinook salmon, are really on the precipice of extinction. They used to have runs of spawning adults, over 100,000 spawning adults as recently as the 1960s. And now we'd be very lucky to get a year where we would have 10,000 spawning adults. And we've had a number of years where we have less than 1,000. So these are species that are in real trouble, are facing the prospect of extinction, and we really need to find something to do about that, both because extinction is bad, but also because species like salmon are very important natural resources, both in terms of the ecology. Salmon bring marine-derived nitrogen up into forests and terrestrial landscapes and fertilize those forests. And they're also incredibly important from a cultural perspective. Many of our indigenous partners, salmon are very important to them and important to the economy of California as a whole. So this is a problem that we should really do something about.
And well, let's talk about that doing something, because we're focusing on these restoration projects like the Klamath Dam removal, the restoration of Big Chico Creek as just a couple of examples that California Trout is involved in. Tell us, from your perspective, why are these projects so important and what could they possibly do to help, you know, maybe reverse those trends you just talked about?
Well, with salmon, but with a lot of our native fishes, one of the major factors that's underlying their decline are problems with fish passage. Oftentimes that's dams. We know that salmon have been cut off from their historical spawning habitats because we built, you know, gigantic dams that don't have fish passage around them. So, you know, figuring out where we can improve fish passage to get these animals to the places where they really evolved to reproduce in and utilize as nursery habitats. It's very important. The big problem is that, you know, as a conservation practitioner, you can't work everywhere, right? You have to kind of pick and choose, where's the best place that we can have an impact? Where can we get the most bang for our buck? And so, you know, finding these locations where you can have an outsized ecological impact by doing restoration, habitat rehabilitation work, it's really important. And that's what a group like CalTrout really specializes in and does quite well. And those projects that you mentioned are a couple of projects that have been identified as places where there could be a major impact by doing something.
And for you as a scientist there at UC Davis, what are some of the things that you do to input to those projects?
Well, it really depends on the different projects or the questions that managers or conservation practitioners might have about a certain project. But, you know, underneath it all is kind of a desire. You want to make really science-based decisions, and you want to use science as a tool to, again, have the largest impact on salmon or a species that you're interested in as possible. So what my group really specializes in is trying to do science that interfaces with conservation decisions, restoration decisions, such that we can do it in the best way possible. And so we use a lot of different kinds of tools for that. Things like fish telemetry, where we put tags in fish and follow them around and see how they do. Sometimes we look at their otoliths, which are these bones in their head, and kind of analyze those to tell things about their biology. But ultimately, trying to learn things about what the fish are doing and how they're using habitat and how we can make that habitat better through these different kinds of projects.
Yeah, and that, so like after your first statements about the imperiled state of our fisheries with the native fish, are you hopeful that some of these projects might reverse those trends?
You know, I really am. It's very easy to get down in the dumps about the state of really our world in general, but particularly with conservation, you can see these numbers, like I mentioned, and feel quite bad about it. But when you see success from past efforts and what can be done if there's the political will and the science going on behind the scenes to make it even better, it does give you hope that we know what works. We just need to do it, and we need to do more of it. So there's great examples of, for example, dam removals that have been wild successes. So the Elwha River dam removal, for example, salmon came back very quickly and in very high numbers after that. And so I think there's a lot of hope that, you know, on a system like the Klamath, for example, we're going to have this largest dam removal in the world's history. Can we have a repeat of the Elwha in the Klamath? But the Klamath is very different. It's much larger. It has other issues going on. What that means is that there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of science to be done to make that restoration effort as great as it can be.
Well, and let's just hope that with these restoration efforts and the scientific oversight that people like you are helping to provide, that we can reverse these trends. Because as I always say, trout and salmon are the canaries in the proverbial coal mine when it comes to watershed health.
Yeah, and they're amazing animals too. You know, anadromous animals live in the ocean, run up these rivers to spawn. They die in a haze of glory and are really kind of heroes in many ways to me. And I think to many people that know the landscape and are familiar with it.
Well, Andrew Ripple from UC Davis and the Center for Watershed Science there, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks to our guest, Professor Andrew Ripple from the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us as Blue Dot continues our look at stream restoration projects being undertaken by the conservation organization California Trout, including a major project on the Klamath River. And we're back. Next up, let's find out more in detail about the Klamath River Dam Removal and Restoration Project with another UC Davis professor, Robert Lusardi. Robert is an aquatic research ecologist and California Trout UC Davis Wild and Coldwater Fish Scientist for the Center for Watershed Sciences, and he joins us now. Robert Lusardi, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you guys having me.
Tell us a bit about your full-blown title there, and how are you affiliated with California Trout?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I realized after graduate school that I worked on really applied stuff, and I had a shared history with California Trout. And it just worked out at the time that as I was finishing my graduate work, I had an opportunity to also work very closely with California Trout in developing a lot of the science on the ground to inform restoration across the state. So my title is I'm an employee at the University of California as a researcher and adjunct faculty, but I do have a title of the California Trout UC Davis Coldwater Fish Scientist as well, which is just fantastic. So I get to integrate with California Trout on a regular basis on numerous projects, mainly in Northern California and Southern Oregon, but as well as other places in the state as well.
Let's talk a bit about dam removal, because that's a big bunch of projects going on, especially there in the Klamath, which is the biggest of them all. What's the science behind this? Why should we remove these dams? What does the science say about this?
So anytime you put a dam into a river, you alter a lot of things. The main thing that you alter is what we call the flow regime. So because of dams, you obviously have storage most routinely behind these dams. And so you're cutting off part of what we call a natural flow regime to store water. And that's important, particularly in places like California Central Valley and Shasta Reservoir. These are large reservoirs that California really depends on during the hot, warm summer months for agricultural, drinking supply, et cetera. The Klamath is a little different in that it's hydroelectric and that, you know, the economics there, I don't think were panning out for the dam owners anymore. And so an agreement kind of came about through both tribal governments, which really lead here on the Klamath River. It's absolutely a tribal river, but also NGOs like California Trout to come to the table and say, you know, these dams are not producing the power maybe that they historically did, or financially it's not as feasible anymore. They also don't have fish passage on them. So we have not seen fish in the upper basin in the Klamath in over 100 years because essentially those fish move up and they hit Iron Gate Dam, which is the lowest most dam in the Klamath River. And it's just a large sheet of concrete and they can't go any further, right? And so I think that, you know, the community led again by the tribes and NGOs really came together and again found this ability to say, hey, these dams need to be moved. This river is critically important for cultures like the Yurok tribe, the Hupa, the Krug tribe, the Klamath tribes. They have not seen fish in a long time. And then promoting passage to the upper basin as well is what we're really after here, right? So the long story short is when you put a dam in, it fundamentally changes the ecosystem. It changes the flow regime. It changes the sediment regime. It changes your thermal regime, how warm the water is in the summer, how cold it is in the winter, all of that. And I think it's really important to recognize that salmon, as well as all native fishes in the Klamath River, had evolved to what we call this natural flow regime, right? So that's almost in a sense like their home field advantage. They can do really well because they evolved there for thousands of years. And then all of a sudden what happens with like Iron Gate Dam or some of these like dams going in the Klamath, you change those flow regimes, those thermal regimes, and all of a sudden everything is different to the fish and they're no longer evolved to those flow regimes. And so you see significant issues from everything from changes in habitat to disease, to changes in run timing, to changes in how many fish you get back to the Klamath River. And so the ability to remove these dams, the largest dam removal in the world that will be starting here shortly, is truly a momentous occasion.
Yeah. From a scientific point of view, how do you go about monitoring this? Like, you know, from now as you go forward, what are some of the criteria you use to monitor your success and to see collect data? What are some of the methodologies you're using?
Yeah. So the main things that we've done, we have limitations, obviously, because of budgets and whatnot. But the main things we've tried to achieve is establishing 16 or 17 sites from the headwaters just below Upper Klamath Lake down to Blue Creek, about 25 kilometers from the mouth of the Klamath River. And what we do there is we are continually monitoring water temperature, and then we also sample water quality on a quarterly basis. So I just had two of my crew went out there just 2 weeks ago, and they ran the river from the top, driving, of course, from the top to the bottom, check our sites, download our temperature data, grab water chemistry samples, etc. At those sites, we are also collecting aquatic invertebrate samples. Aquatic invertebrates, or macrovertebrates, as some people call them, are really important because there's a lot of species and they're really sensitive to change. So they're excellent kind of biological indicators of change in the system. And so we are interested in collecting aquatic invertebrates at these 16 sites to see, one, to create the baseline for pre-dam removal, and then two, see how those invertebrate communities change with removal of the dams and the Klamath as well, right? And we could do that with fish too. Fish are longer lived and tend to move more, right? So if they're not in a good situation because temperatures are too high or flows are too high or something like that, they move to other locations. Bugs kind of, they can move, they can disperse through the watershed as well, but they turn over really quickly. And as I mentioned, they're sensitive to change. So if you get a pulse of warm water sediment coming through the system, the bugs will be the first ones to tell you kind of biologically what's going on there. How are these changes in the environment affecting the biology?
Describe the geography of this river and this project. You've mentioned the upper basin. Where exactly is that? What are some of the issues up there? And then, sure, you know, tell us about how the Klamath River travels from there to the ocean.
Yeah, so the Klamath River is what we call, sometimes it's called an upside down river because it's very unique, right? And I'll explain that in a second. When I'm referring to the upper basin, I'm really talking about Upper Klamath Lake on the Oregon side near Klamath Fall and the tributaries that feed Upper Klamath Lake. Typically, we would see kind of lake wetland habitats lower down towards the mouth of the Klamath River. And that's why it's often referred to as an upside down river, because it's kind of opposite. You have higher gradient lower down in the river coming out of the coast range to the mouth, and lower gradient up top and really productive ecosystem as well. And so you have really important tributaries up top, including the Sprague River, the Williamson River, and the Wood River. These are largely groundwater-fed, spring-fed systems, which is one of my research expertise. Those systems are very cold during the summer. They're great habitat, thermal habitat for cold water fish, such as spring run salmon, fall run salmon, coho salmon, red band trout, etc. Those tributaries pour into Upper Klamath Lake. Upper Klamath Lake historically was a wetland-dominated habitat where you would have fish rear and get large. And then depending what run or evolutionary significant unit, let's call them, ESU as the federal government defines them, you would have fish leaving at different times of year from the lake, right? And they would move out and they would move downstream, first to Link River and then down to the main stem Klamath River as well, eventually making their way out to the ocean.
What are your hopes for the future here? What do you hope this looks like, the Klamath system, years from now, after all of this dam removal and the research and restoration projects going on? What's your hopes for the future here, briefly?
Yeah, my hope is that, and I think what will happen is it will take some time, but it's the water, you know, these rivers are really good at dealing with movement of sediment and water and reorganizing themselves to create really good habitat for fish, right? And so animals like Chinook Spring Run have largely been extirpated from the Klamath River Basin, and Spring Run Chinook are vitally important to the tribes in the Klamath River and always have been for thousands of years. So, of course, I'm looking forward to seeing fish like spring run, but also fall run, coho salmon, and others return to the Klamath River watershed and volitionally access the upper basin, which they haven't done in 100 years. But I'm also really excited for the tribal communities because so much has been lost over the last 100 years to have these runs decline precipitously in the last 80 to 100 years or so. It's just been... it's devastating, obviously, from a biological diversity perspective, but culturally, spiritually, those fish are so important to tribal communities. And so I'm really looking forward to continuing to work with our partners at Yurok, Karoo, Kupa, Klamath tribes, and really hoping that the benefits of those fish coming back will be really good for their cultures and continuation of that as well moving forward.
Well, Robert Lusardi, senior researcher from UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences, thanks for joining us to talk about this exciting project, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it works out moving forward. I'm very hopeful that it will turn out to restore this river system to at least a semblance of what it once was.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks to Robert Lusardi from UC Davis. Now let's get some tribal perspective on the Klamath Dam removal and restoration. Our guest is Brooke Thompson. Brooke is a Yurok Native American and a PhD student at UC Santa Cruz, where she's working on better integrating indigenous knowledge into California water policy. She joins us now to talk about her home watershed, the Klamath. Brooke Thompson, welcome to Blue Dot.
Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to first start out by finding out a little bit. Can you express to our listeners and me, you know, what the Klamath River and the life in it, is particularly this salmon, what does that mean to you?
Oh, that's a big question to start out with. I mean, for me, it's really everything. The salmon are a connection to my ancestors, because many years before I was born, generations ago, my ancestors had a relationship with the salmon I catch now's ancestors. And those people in my tribe managed the salmon, so I could grow up having them to eat and live a healthy life and continue to protect them. So my tribe and living on the river, my health is really connected to the health of those salmon there.
Well, let's talk about the Klamath and this dam removal project that's being spearheaded by a group of organizations, California Trout, your tribe, and others. Tell us from your perspective why this is so important to remove these dams.
Yeah, so the dam removal is the first step in what's going to be a much longer restoration project to help improve water quality, so that the salmon and other aquatic life like lamprey and sturgeon, et cetera, continue to thrive instead of being pushed to the low levels they currently are at. I mean, as a kid, I was able to catch 130 salmon in one day, and I had to actually take out my net because it was too much salmon to process and we didn't need that many. But
wow.
When in 2018 was the first year, I believe, I'd never caught a single salmon in the summer. And after having that be my entire life for my summers, since I could stand up in a boat, it was really devastating. It's something that's easy to see how much it's affected people on the reservation. But yeah, the removing the dams will be a good step in improving water quality, because when water's behind the dams, it becomes stagnant and gets hot, can be a spreading ground for bacteria and blue-green algae blooms, which are toxic.
Well, your people have lived there for millennia. Tell us about some of the things, the principles that you have that are going to use in this restoration project that comes from your culture. What are some of the principles you want to apply in this, the big picture of the restoration of the Klamath?
In an ideal world, for me, the restoration will never end. Like, when it comes to budgeting and from my engineering perspective, right, you have when you have money coming in, when it stops, the date that the project ends. And for me, restoration looks like a continued relationship with the land where there's mutual benefits, such as gathering basket materials and berries, et cetera, while also taking out invasive species, being observational about what's going on and the changes in the area. And because of that, for me, there restoration should be perpetual, because it should be a continued relationship with the environment and thinking about the long term instead of when the money's going to run out and when people stop caring about the removal of the dams.
And, you know, the Klamath, if there's one place in California, and of course there are many where water is an issue, I can't think of anywhere where it's more contentious than especially the upper Klamath Basin. What are some of the big hurdles you think we have to cross to get past that, to make sure the water is flowing into the Klamath once we get these dams removed?
For me, it's the understanding that at the end of the day, a lot of these interested parties that might be opposed to one another, we have similar values in that we want a future where our kids can grow up and not have to worry about issues of money, of health, of being able to carry on legacies that our families have for generations. And so coming to those agreements and understanding that there's not one right answer and that it's going to take collaboration and maybe settling some older generational trauma in order to move forward to create a place on earth that we all want to live in.
Yeah. And it's such a beautiful, diverse area. I just want to see it healed and healthy. And I know you do too. What are some of the things, you know, tell us about what you'll actually be doing after the dam removal. What are some of the, you know, from your engineering standpoint as an ecology restoration engineer, what are some things you'll actually do to help things along?
Yeah. So for the tribe, we are collecting seeds currently that are going to be used to replant native species on the landscape because right now there's huge reservoirs behind the dams that it's covering up acres of land that when it's drained and the water moves more freely, we'll have all this opportunity to plant native plants before invasive species can creep in. And so that's one of the things the tribe's working on. And then it'll also be creating more habitat for salmonoids like the baby fish to grow up in these streams and ponds with wood, with creating floodplains, etc. Because removing the dams is going to open up hundreds of miles of new habitat, or really habitat that already belonged to the salmon but was taken away. So it will be continuous improvement of what we've been altering over the last 100 years and getting it back to a place where salmon feel and lamprey and these other species can feel like they can be safe and call home.
Brooke, why is it so important to work with the tribal communities that have lived for millennia along the Klamath River and in other places? Why is it important for us to work together?
So it is so important because, one, we've been kept off the land because of previous racist policies and different issues with the United States. So having us work on these restoration projects lets us as tribal communities reconnect with the land and these areas. And for me, I believe that creates improved quality in the restoration project because I get to see people who really, truly care about the outcome of these projects. It's not just a paycheck to them. To them, it's about connecting to their ancestors, about having a good time while working and trying to see what they can do best for the plants and considering them in the process, not as objects, but as partners. And then also understanding that we are some of the people who are most affected by climate change and these water issues. And so helping us become the solution to these problems we are most faced with is an important aspect to consider.
And can you address a little bit about what it's like working with these other groups that are involved in this, like particularly California trout? How important is it to have partners like them in this restoration project, which is one of the largest ever attempted?
So for me, I've only been involved this last year with working with these other organizations and groups, but it's been really inspiring. I love that there are so many people who, even though they might not have that cultural connection that I do growing up on the Klamath River, they still have this deep care and understanding and wanting to do their work. And I think this is something we all have in common, is that we have the fortune of doing a job that we really care about every single day and that we can feel proud of doing. And meeting those other people that get excited talking about water, salmon, and the future of these rivers is what brings me joy, is working with the groups. And obviously they have different understandings of how funding, of how policy, and how restoration works. And I think it requires a diverse background and bringing all these different groups together to get the best outcome for these projects.
And then, you know, looking into the future, if you can do that, what do you hope to see in like 5-10 years? What would be, you know, your dream of how this restoration will play out? What do you hope to see there?
Well, I think it's kind of funny you say that, because actually in the future, I'd like to see people looking out more than 5 or 10 years. I mean, for me, one of my big pushes is that I'd like to see kind of what my ancestors have been doing, where we look out 50, 100, 200 years into the future when it comes to restoration work, and that we're not only seeing what the near future will look like, but what our great grandkids' futures will look like, and how the work we're doing right now will then impact them. And so for me, that would be as free flowing a river as we can have, having clean water and also using new technologies with incorporated indigenous knowledge so that we can better manage our water that we have right now. And we don't have to have these stresses when it comes to fighting over water that we're currently seeing.
What are some of the technologies you particularly use that are helpful to you in conjunction with your traditional knowledge?
So one of the technologies that I really like to support is recycled water. So recycled water is pretty much using, well, I mean, all water is recycled at the end of the day, but using water that comes out of wastewater treatment plants, putting it through extra filters, and using it for example, irrigation on farms instead of going back into the river. And so this would help reduce some of the pressure we have. And then also, for example, improving our infrastructure. Right now we have like a degrade in infrastructure in the US from the American Association of Civil Engineers. And we lose a ton of water, like up to 30% of water through pipelines and just through leaks and cracks. And if we could have 30% more water than we do right now through improving our infrastructure, a lot of our issues would be solved right there.
Well, Brooke Thompson, restoration engineer for the Yurok tribe, thank you so much for sharing your perspectives with us.
Wakla, thank you.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us as we'll take a look at a new restoration project being undertaken by Cal Trout on Big Chico Creek. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. If you're just joining us, we're examining some of the major watershed restoration projects being undertaken by the conservation organization California Trout. Now let's turn our attention to a stream that literally runs past our studio, Big Chico Creek in Northern California. Our guests are Damon Goodman, the Mount Shasta Klamath Regional Director for Cal Trout, and Holly Swan, the Mount Lassen Project Manager for California Trout based in Chico. Damon Goodman and Holly Swan, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Damon, I'd like to start with you. I'd like to just get a big picture of what California Trout is all about as an organization. Tell us a bit about it.
In our logo, right on the front of our logo, it's fish, water, people, right? And so what the organization's about is providing healthy waters for the enjoyment of Californians, right? And we're a leader in restoration policy and science in California. We're something like $27 million of effort gone towards projects like that in 2023 alone.
Wow. And was the first project that Cal Trout ever did, was what that was up on Hat Creek, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're a little over 50 years in as an organization now. And the project started over there in Hat Creek, where it was an experiment to see, hey, without stocking these waters, can we have healthy, abundant fishery? And that's where things started. And we've been moving towards restoration efforts throughout California ever since.
Well, Holly, California Trout's an organization that focuses on conservation. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between conservation and preservation. Where do they overlap, and how are they a little different when in terms of your work with California Trout?
Yeah, so I would say conservation can be defined as like proper use of nature, so multi-use benefits of lands and waters. Gifford Pinchot, he was the one who said the provide the greatest good for the greatest number for the longest time. And then that would be in contrast to preservation, which is really John Muir is really the father of preservation. And that seeks protection of nature from use. So really value of nature for more spiritual and transcendental qualities. And I think there's a time and place for both, right? Preservation of lands and waters that are still untouched by anthropogenic activities versus conservation of lands that already have a lot of human activity in them. We can work together. Is, for example, fish, water, people. What's good for fish is good for people. So working within those systems that we already have.
Well, let's talk about the big project that you're involved with, Holly, right at our home base in Chico, yeah. California, for our station, Big Chico Creek. Tell me how this particular project came about. What was the genesis of it? How did this get chosen as a big project to do for Caltrout?
Yeah, I think Damon would actually be the best to speak to that because he was the boots on the ground, first person to sort of see the issue that lies there.
Thanks for that, Holly. So back in 2021, I was working for the Fish and Wildlife Service at the time and doing a fish survey in Big Chico Creek on the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve. And we're surveying the creek, looking what fish were there. Very obvious that the components of the native fish fauna weren't present. And we're thinking about that. And I'm walking along the bank and here comes an individual walking down towards me, no one else around. And we start talking. He asked me, what are you up to down here at the creek? What are you guys doing? And I said, surveying for fish. And the conversation went on from there. It became apparent very quickly that this individual knew a lot about fish. And as it turns out, it was Dr. Paul Maslin that had spent his career studying the fishes of Big Chico Creek. And we got into a conversation there about how fish passage had been blocked in Iron Canyon. Past management practices were applied to remove some of the native fish that were thought to compete with the game fish, the salmon and steelhead there. And that was really the beginning of the project for my engagement with it. And then that, as I transitioned over to California Trout, we took up this effort and conversations along the Canyon Rim with partners from including the Machupta Tribe and the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve and others, and momentum built from there. And Holly has been taking the reins forward from there.
And Holly, you live there. Chico is your home.
I do. 20 years.
For our listeners, many of our listeners are very familiar with Big Chico Creek, mm-hmm. but many may not be. Could you tell us just a bit about, describe what this creek is like from the Sacramento River to the area you're restoring?
Yeah, so from the Sacramento River, it comes up, I'd say maybe 8 or so miles, and it goes through Chico State's campus, and then it goes through a 4,000-acre municipal park, so it goes through Lower Park. All the way through Middle Park and then Upper Park, where it's still a municipal park, but it's very rural. There's multi-use trails all around. And then it keeps on going all the way to the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve and all the way up to the Colby Mountains, which I think is about 6,000 feet elevation at the very top.
Ah, yes. Well, let's talk about this specific ecosystem in detail. Describe it for us in terms of, you know, both the fishery for the salmonids and the other species of fish there, because I know that you're also concentrating on that holistic approach, not just the steelhead and salmon.
Yeah. As you mentioned, we're taking a holistic approach to restoration here, and we have two species of salmon or salmonids that historically were present in the stretch that we're working to reconnect, and that's spring run Chinook salmon and then also steelhead. Both of those historically made it up into the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve and past Iron Canyon. But there's a host of other native fish species, and in the past, there was a thought that non-game species competed with those native salmonids, and therefore the salmonids wouldn't be as successful, right? And so, you know, it was like a competition for space or something like that. And that paradigm has completely shifted, right? And now we see the ecological interactions of these different fish species and how they benefit each other. Take, for example, Pacific lamprey, which is one of the native species there, lives in the sediment and filter feeds the water. And as part of that is cleaning the water for the other fish species, improving water quality. They also think of them as almost like worms in the ground in your garden, right? They live in that sediment, they're bioturbators. Or another example would be the way they construct their reds in the spring creates diversity in the bathymetry of the riverbed, creating feeding stations for salmon and other species. So we've come a long way in our understanding of the interrelationship of these fishes. And so to benefit the entire fish community, we're going through and taking measures to benefit all the fish species. And it goes on from there, right? We're not just looking at the river, but they've noticed on the ecological reserve that some of the predators that rely on these fish for food have also disappeared, for example, or reduced in numbers. For example, river otters, osprey, those type of predators that rely on that have also been reduced. Their numbers have been reduced on the ecological reserve. So this is really a holistic approach to restoration of the Big Chico Creek watershed. And we're really excited to be a partner with these other organizations to bring this project forward.
What are your hopes for how this will benefit all involved, especially, you know, like people in the community? How do you hope this will benefit people?
You know, fish is a given, right? For water, there's an increased beneficial nutrients that these fish will bring to the entire ecosystem. And really, they're sort of the canary in the coal mine. So they're an indicator of a healthy watershed. When they're there, we know the watershed is functioning properly. When they're not, something's up. And then as far as people go, the enjoyment of a better functioning ecosystem. Not everyone's a fish person, but maybe you're a birder or you like to view wildlife or you like to go out and look in wildflowers. This project will sort of bring that holistic approach to the entire ecosystem and benefit, you know, other types of recreationists, not just anglers. And then there's this really awesome education and outreach component that's really connecting K through 12 with nature and nature-based solutions. So showing them what's possible, the technology we have out there, the processes we have, and just hopefully enhancing their overall enjoyment of the area.
And Damon, you know, projecting into the future, what are your hopes for this project? What do you hope it looks like, you know, in many years from now?
My hope for the future is to reestablish runs of anadromous steelhead and spring run chinook so they can swim right up through town. And the community of Chico can be swimming in Big Chico Creek, surrounded by these charismatic fishes.
Damon Goodman and Holly Swan from California Trout, thanks for joining us to talk about the organization in general and this particular project there on Big Chico Creek.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks to Damon Goodman and Holly Swan from California Trout. Our final guest has a deep interest and stake in the restoration of Big Chico Creek. Hilo Ramirez is a biologist and environmental educator and member of the Machupta tribe, who have lived along Big Chico Creek for millennia. He joins us now to give his perspective on the restoration of this water that once saw thriving runs of Chinook salmon. Hilo Ramirez, welcome to Blue Dot.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dave.
First of all, I would like to know, what is Big Chico Creek in your language, the Machupta?
In the Machupta language, the name is Otakumsewi, and then the word Ooh. O means rock, and Tekum or Takum means steps or to step down. So either the verb or the adjective. So it's the creek with the big boulderous basalt rocks that step down. So imagine you're a giant and you're walking up the canyon in the Upper Biddle Park. That's what the name means.
Ah, yeah, very apt. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about what that ecosystem, Big Chico Creek, what that area means to the Machupta people and has meant for a very long time? Did you hear stories about what it was like, you know, long ago when it was a fully healthy ecosystem?
Yeah. So long ago, we have our oral history tells us that the creek would flood with salmon. So we had more than just one run of salmon. We had multiple runs, and there were actually multiple species of salmon. So it wasn't just Chinook. It was other species as well that came up. And they would be so numerous that there would be traffic jams, and they would flop onto the side of the bank. So they would get pushed out of the creeks. And it was a very important food source for us historically and still is to us today.
And salmonids are so important, not just as a food source, of course, that's, you know, a primary importance, but also culturally and spiritually. Could you describe a little bit about what salmonids mean to your people and why it's important to try to restore them to this stretch of Big Chico Creek.
Yeah. Salmonids, like acorns, are a lifeblood for us. They have taken care of our people since time immemorial, thousands and thousands of years. And there is a deep intrinsic connection with salmon and acorns and us as a people. Not only do the food, but just ecosystem functions. The salmonids and then other anadromous fishes like the Pacific lamprey eel, they go on out to the ocean, they accumulate all those nutrients, and then they come back. And then they spawn, they die. And then those nutrients then feed the bears, it feeds the acorns, and then the acorns turn into trees. They help cool the creek and create good spawning habitat for the salmon. So just this intrinsic knowledge that we're all connected and we don't live in isolation from the environment and the world. We are an intrinsic part of the natural world, and those are our kin.
And when did you first become aware of this project? How was the tribe approached to become partners in this? When did this first get on your radar?
This first got on my radar about a year ago from today. There was a small group getting together comprising of City of Chico, the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve, Cal Trout, us, the tribe, and a few other partners such as Galen, who used to work for California Fish and Wildlife back when it was called California Fish and Game. And we met at Iron Canyon in Upper Biddle Park and just discussed possibilities and possible grants that we could pursue to improve salmonid passage habitat, but also take an ecosystem approach and also restore the other native fish species in the area that contribute to the ecosystem health and the ecosystem function, such as having ospreys and bald eagles and other birds of prey and other life forms to be able to benefit from the project as well.
What's the tribe's toolkit, if you will? What are some of the things that you're going to bring to the table to make this restoration, you know, even better?
So the tribe's involvement with this project is twofold. One, we're going to heavily engage in outreach and education with the public and just share this oral history with them that Big Chico Creek used to be a very healthy salmon river. And then also we'll be part of the implementation phase with the restoration of the site. There will be a crane used to help remove the in-stream passage barriers. And at that site, there are a lot of native geophytes and other plants that are there. We're going to be collecting those genotypes. And then after construction is done, we'll be engaging in traditional ecological knowledge restoration of the project site.
Ah, so you'll kind of protect them by taking them out of there and then putting them back after all of that construction. Is that right?
That's right. And then also probably collect some seeds so that way we have multiple avenues of revegetating the site. So not only gather the bulbs and then replant the bulbs, but also collect seed from those bulbs before construction begins.
And for you personally, because I know you're very you've got an educational background in environmental science there at CSU Chico. When did you first really become interested in ecological matters?
It would probably be when I was very young, around 4 or 5 years old. My father started taking me out hunting and fishing and hiking. And I was raised in that environment a lot. We would go waterfowl hunting. I'd spend, you know, a few days out in the tules. We'd go summer camping for 2 months at a time, and I would spend my time in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada and the mountains. And I just loved being outdoors and with animals. And then I found out that there was an avenue in life where I could do that without murdering animals.
And are you hoping to also pass that along to, you know, younger people through these educational projects you're going to be involved in?
Yeah, I have a huge passion for place-based environmental education. That education that I got from my father growing up, I now learn there's a term for it, place-based. And that is particularly important for Native American youth, that the education system doesn't serve them. So providing that culturally relevant place-based learning is going to be a big part of this project for me, but also on a more general sense for the general public, providing that place-based education will be helpful for them because everyone should know about the place that they live in.
Well, Hilo Ramirez, Director of Environmental Planning and Protection for the Machupta Tribe in Chico, California, thanks for sharing your knowledge of this special place and your hopes for the future.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave.
Thanks again to all of our guests from the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences, Andrew Ripple and Robert Lusardi, from the Yurok Tribe, Brooke Thompson, from Caltrout, Damon Goodman and Holly Swan, and from the Machupta Tribe, Hilo Ramirez. Here's hoping that cold, clean waters return to the Klamath and Big Chico Creek so that that benefits all the life that depends on them. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of CAP Radio on the banks of Big Chico Creek in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. The theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.